I'm Mike Sainsbury. At the recent Rethink TV conference in Australia, Karen Nelson-Field presented the results of a major study she had conducted into the effectiveness of video advertising across various devices and platforms. She discusses some of these important findings in this interview with Brian Jacobs. One of the most interesting ideas to emerge is the possibility of using levels of attentiveness to advertising as a reliable proxy for its effectiveness. Attention and viewability was measured by employing eye-tracking technology, recording where respondents' gaze fell on the screen.
Well, hi everybody, this is Brian Jacobs, and today on this ASI podcast we're joined by Karen Nelson-Field, from the founder of the Centre for Amplified Intelligence in Australia. So hi there, Karen. I was going to say morning, but evening.
It is evening. How are you?
I'm pretty good, thanks. I'm pretty good. So, Karen, we're aware, and I'm sure some of the people listening to this will be aware, of your excellent presentation at the Rethink TV event the other week in Australia, where you outlined some fascinating research that you've been doing with your colleagues. And I wondered if you could begin by just summarizing for us what it was you did, what your key objectives were, and so on.
Okay, well, that's summarizing a 12-month study is no mean feat, but I will try. I guess I was engaged as an academic to kind of come in and have a look at trying to assist, I guess, TV in terms of swinging the pendulum back a little. And you know, I mean, some of your listeners may actually be aware of my background, but I'm a media researcher and I've done a lot of work in the digital space. So I am very platform agnostic, but I do believe that in the hype that is digital / social of the last 10 years, marketers have failed to commit dollars to larger, more traditional platforms. And so when I was engaged by the Australian TV networks, they said, how can you help us, I guess, in essence, re-establish this baseline that we once held? And I said, well, okay, that's easy for me. I understand brand growth norms. I understand how advertising works. So let's sort of have a look and see the sorts of things that TV do well or not so well, and how that may align to brand choice, or brand growth, I should say. So in essence, we kind of picked this theme around attributes that matter and said, these are the things that matter most to advertising and being thought of at the purchase occasion, so brand growth 101, and how does TV and competitor media perform under different conditions of this. So that's kind of where it started.
Right. Now, one of the things that was very interesting about this, I thought, was that you took out the creative effect, didn't you, by just using the same creative pod, in effect, throughout everything.
We did. Yeah, I mean, my commercial business is a little bit different to a typical A, academic, B, market researcher, in that I actually hire a bunch of really, really smart computer science engineers. So they've, in the last 12 to 18 months, introduced me to the world of computer vision and software engineering. And so my whole life agenda at the moment is about minimizing human bias in research design. So between us, it's kind of fun, because what that means is that I can actually do some pretty cool stuff in research design that a typical market researcher can't do. And back to your point, one of those things was that we were able, knowing what we know about creative and how it does impact A, attention, B, advertising effects, we needed to control for that. So my very long story short is that it was really important that we had the same creative cross-platform. So there was a really long process of collecting data naturally in the YouTube platform. We built technology to kind of scrape all of the videos that were naturally viewed, and then we repopulated those same videos into our 8 subsequent test and control groups. So a long way of saying, yes, we did. We controlled for creative because it was important.
So actually, the people who were watching, you know, the people who were, let's say, viewing YouTube saw, in effect, the same commercial pod as the people who were viewing TV or were viewing on Facebook.
They did. And again, I lost a lot of sleep over how to do it. But what we basically, it was also really important that the digital groups were very natural, because obviously we would have had some criticism. And as you would expect, if the digital groups were forced, I guess, to watch in any unnatural way, because bear in mind, we also used technology that initiated the camera in each of the devices. So people were literally watching at home on their TV sets, on their mobile, on the bus, however it was. YouTube groups were first, because that was 100% natural. So we also designed some software that literally crawled their experience and downloaded every single video into what we call like a creative bucket. Mm-hmm. And then we took those pieces of content. I mean, the TV groups were easy to populate because we had access to all the major networks' production houses, so that was easy. And then we fed, there were about six choices of the different programs. We fed that back out to the groups. But with the YouTube group, we were able to intercept the ad load, which sounds bad, but when they were shown or when there was an ad, in their feed, quite naturally we were able to replace the ad that they were supposed to see with the ad that we had control for, so one of our test ads. So bear in mind, we didn't build this app for general use. We used it in the confines of in the perimeters of a research group. So I just put that caveat up there.
Okay. So cutting to the quick, as it were, I mean, one of your major findings, I suppose, summarizing, as you say, 12 months work in a few seconds, was that attention is a good thing. So attention seems to be the driver of sales. The more people pay attention to something, the more they are aware of, I suppose, and paying attention to the advertising, the more likely they are to actually go and buy something.
Does that surprise you?
No, it doesn't surprise me in the least. I mean,
and it's funny because the TV Association, Think TV, have advertised this work as being groundbreaking, and people have said, yeah, but that makes sense. And I say, well, yeah, I know, but you'd obviously forgotten.
Yeah. The thing is, it's always nice, isn't it, when, you know, research research concludes something that feels intuitively, sort of right. You know?
You're 100% correct. So attention is something of interest to me because, I mine is scarce and I have too many children and it goes all over the place. But I've been following some work of Associate Professor Thales Teixeira from Harvard, and he's very much into this whole concept of the attention economy, and he's done a whole lot of work around the cost of inattention, extended that into the impact of attention or non-attention. But I've been quite interested in his work, and again, it's on this sensible premise that you have to be making, or you have to sort of be paying attention to make any kind of cognitive decision. Now, that may be around buying, that may be around discussion with your family. It can be with any kind of behavioral output. So for me, given my business is now kind of in the technology game, we'd had some experience with a major piece of work we did with Unilever a couple of years back where we built some gaze-based technology, gaze meaning the camera is activated and we can track where people's eyes are. And we thought, well, let's build an attention measure that was very much grounded in theory. So it's active, passive, and non-viewing, and see where the patterns lead us. So in true research style, we had sales and we had attention. So we used two key impact measures just to make sure that, A, they were measuring the same thing. And you know as well as I do that sometimes sales, you know, advertising doesn't have any effect. So we wanted to make sure that if there was no effect, that attention was a much more granular level, so they didn't have to make a choice. So, yeah, the short answer is that, and I've said that already a few times this evening, that the greater the degree of attention, the greater the impact. In fact, we've just written a paper, another paper for WARC, which is being released, I think, in November, which talks about the ability to use attention as a predictive measure of sales. So we found this work consistent across 8 sets of data. So we're really actually quite excited for attention being used as a proxy in the future, because I think it's a much less expensive way of gathering sales, in essence.
It also seems a much more, it seems a genuine sort of move forward away from, along the same sort of track, I suppose, from saying, well, awareness is a predictor of sales. Because, you know, it's sort of the next stage along, isn't it? I mean, you can be aware of something and not pay much attention to it.
I mean, to some degree, yes. I mean, awareness is slightly different in that it's a recalled measure. So that's where I would say there's some subjectivity there, because memory-based measures, I mean, I don't know what your memory's like, but mine's pretty bad. So when you're asked to recall, it's, again, very much human bias. I mean, that's noted in literature, so that's, again, no surprise. Whereas with attention, unless you state it, because some unfortunate studies do actually say, what level of attention did you pay? We didn't do self-proclaimed. We did actual eyes on screen. So for us, this is really exciting from a theoretical perspective to be able to link active viewing to a measure of sales output, yes.
Yeah. I mean, what I thought was also fascinating about this was that, again, given the point that you've made that you equalise the creative, so you teased apart, as it were, the creative effect and the, in quotes, media effect or platform effect, whatever you want to call it, you then moved in to look to what are the various factors that impact attention or have contribute to attention, I suppose. And one of your points was about was trying to understand whether or not clutter made a difference. Now, I mean, I know that you use the word coverage, don't you, in the sense of coverage of a screen as opposed to coverage of a population, which obviously is the way it's normally used. But it's more to do, isn't it, with the percentage of the screen that the ad is covering.
Yes.
That impacts on the attention.
Yeah, and a bit of background with that. So some of my work only a few years ago looked at clutter within ad pods. So I looked at Facebook TV and I think it was radio and tried to understand whether the frequency of exposure within an ad break or on a page, and that was in the early days when Facebook were just throwing ads at you, whether it had an impact on your ability to, in that case it was recall, so it's quite a few years ago, and sure enough, as has literature suggested for 20 years, the more ads you see, the harder it is for you for it to cut through, right? So, but given the nature of this study, I was thinking, well, how will I measure clutter in that sense? And bear in mind, the nature of the study is purely natural. So I couldn't manipulate the amount of ads people saw, because then it would make it an unnatural viewing experience. So we said, all right, well, what else is there that represents clutter? And I think I said on stage, I go back to I'm very much a proud News Corp girl from my 20s, worked there for years. And we used to look at how many other ads were on the broadsheet as to whether the advertiser would pay less or more. So you'd pay a premium for being the only one on the page, and that makes sense because their theory was that, you know, there's less clutter, so you pay more attention. So I went back to those days and I thought, well, I wonder how I can measure that in this forum. And we built some additional technology which actually took measurements of the screen that they viewed on, as well as we tagged every single ad. And long, long story short, we were able to measure the amount of clutter around the natural ad that was exposed. So coverage is exactly what you said, is the proportion of the screen that the ad covers. And we looked at so many relationships with coverage, but obviously how much coverage, does coverage link directly to sales, and then also does coverage link directly to attention? And the short answer is the greater the coverage, the greater the sale, the greater the attention. So again, not one of those highly surprising ones, but very, very consistent across multiple sets of data. And it's important for us to make sure this was rigorous. So we wouldn't have produced just a one-off, you know, spurious correlation. So we're very excited for the generalizability.
But what is fascinating about this is if you take the, I mean, most people listening to this will be aware of the IAB standards as to what constitutes a view, I suppose, which is in video, it's 50% of the ad or 50% of the pixels, I suppose, being seen for at least 2 seconds. And your point, I think, is that the of those two bits, in other words, the proportion of the ad being on the screen or what you call the coverage and the time that people spent with it, you're saying that the coverage is more significant than the time.
We are. So you're 100% right. So bear in mind you don't measure TV with pixels because there is no variation whatsoever. So to your point, we measured what we call three, I guess, measures of visibility. And one was time on screen. To your point, one was pixels. And then this third, which is coverage. So just for your own listeners, you can still have 100% pixels on screen but half the coverage. And Facebook and YouTube as a comparison are example of that. So you pay for 100% pixel ad on Facebook, but you get it's half the size. So for us, what we could see was that that coverage kind of extended that relationship, which makes sense. So for us, coverage is different, but at the same time, it's an extension of visibility.
Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the comments, your work is obviously created since your presentation at Rethink. It's obviously created a lot of interesting points of view and comments from people in the community. One point was made. One point that I've seen suggested that because consumers are using things like Facebook and YouTube and so on, they're using them kind of more proactively. They're looking for something or they're chatting with their friends or they're doing whatever they're doing, but they're using them kind of proactively. They're actually doing something active with it. Then an ad of any type really that interrupts them from their, you know, from their desired process is going to be more annoying and therefore less successful than an ad appearing on a more passively consumed medium like TV. I mean, would you agree with that? I mean, it's people are using these things for different purposes.
Absolutely. So the short answer is I can't answer that question because we did not collect attitudes. But what we did see was there was a much higher degree of passive attention, for example, on the Facebook forum versus any other. So that would, in my opinion, my educated guess would say you're spot on. Annoyance, don't know if I would go that far because we didn't test for that. But what we could definitely see that, you know, on a platform like Facebook, people were clearly paying considerably less attention and there was a greater degree of passive. Now, let me explain passive and how we measured that on Facebook and YouTube. We did gaze. So we could tell if someone was, and we tagged the ads from inwardly. So what that meant is we could see or tell if someone was looking at the ad on screen or at the screen and not on the ad. So we called that passive. And sure enough, and in the literature, there is some work around subconscious processing playing a role. And we would now look into that further and say we agree that passive does help. It's just like it's in its peripheral, you know, the ad was in their peripheral vision, but they haven't literally paid active attention to it. So to your point with that comment, look, I've been in this position before where I've managed to be quite controversial with findings. So it doesn't bother me that there's opinion to which way is right or not. But I think I agree with you in this case that, you know, we are on different platforms for different experiences and hence why attention levels vary and why some platforms, in my opinion, are better platforms for advertising delivery.
Yeah. I mean, people are using them. I mean, I'm not suggesting for a minute this is something you could you could demonstrate from this work, because it wasn't the purpose of it, but you know, as a sort of moving things along, as it were, it might be a very interesting thing to sort of explore how people are using these different channels and what they're using them for, as opposed to putting that factor into the equation, as it were, rather than.
Yeah, it's interesting you even say that. So I did some work, perhaps almost as controversial, in 2012, where I challenged the engagement metric, which was then called PTAT on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I did it during their IPO period. So it also went quite viral, I should say, and wasn't particularly well received by some. But basically, I sort of said, look, we've done a year's worth of work and disentangled the algorithm. We can see that on average, people return to the brand pages less than, I think it's 1% or something. I can't remember the finding off, less than 1% of the brand population go back to the page. But my point was that in that study, I did actually what you said. And we, unfortunately, it wasn't technology. So some poor young graduate team worked for me 6 months straight calculating what people we screen recorded. So I must have it in me, because even back then we screen recorded, I think it was about 400 people using Facebook for about 20 minutes, and it literally took them 6 to 8 months to code it all up. And we could see even back then that the majority of the time they were talking to friends and certainly not interested in the ads even then.
Mm. It's interesting, you said, maybe just to sort of to finish, because this is a fascinating conversation, but you said a while back, or you asked me a while back, whether or not I was surprised by the fact that, you know, if people had noticed something, then it was more likely to have an effect. I mean, as it were, obviously the answer is no, I wasn't surprised in the least. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Karen. It's fascinating talking to you, and I hope very much that we'll see you on a platform soon.
Pleasure, thank you.
You can listen to other ASI Cast interviews by accessing the archive of recordings at asiconferences.com.